Stepping into the studio, a man who needs no introduction, John Travolta is with us. He's got a new film out, Richard Roper. Explain exactly what it is.
The movie is called The Fanatic, and John Travolta plays Moose, who is a super fan, who has an encyclopedic knowledge of movies and loves film and likes to collect things from the movie world, kind of almost lives in his own movie world. And his number one all-time favorite, bestest hero of the movies is an action star named Hunter Dunbar. And Moose is finally going to get his chance to meet his idol, maybe even get an autograph on a special piece of memorabilia. Question is, what happens after Moose and Hunter cross paths more than once and things don't go exactly maybe how Moose one day envisioned? John Travolta is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you for that intro. That was fantastic.
So does it go well for Moose? Do they get along great and they look happy?
Oh, man, that's a loaded question. you know, the simplicity of it is that this character, well, he's a man-child, for one, and he's a bit on the spectrum. So he doesn't clock his behavior very much. Mm-hmm. And so when he crosses over the line of privacy, let's call it, he's not aware of it. But to be fair, neither is the movie star. The movie star is not aware of Moose's lack of awareness. And he kind of tends to mistreat him every time my character goes over the line. So they're kind of two wrongs don't make a right in this situation. But man, do we take you on a trip telling you that story. And I've been so thrilled with the reaction to this movie, a pet project of mine. So exciting.
It's interesting for the times, too, right? Because, you know, we're living now in a media environment, in a celebrity environment, because of social media and all the other things that are going on. And also our awareness of the spectrum. We're using a term to describe this movie that 20 years ago, people go, what are you talking about?
So I think it's very important to understand. And in this character, he's got such he's not a professional fan. He's a real fan. Mm-hmm. And he says that many times and reminds everyone he's not a stalker. He's a real fan. He doesn't sell his memorabilia. He collects it and will go to the grave with it. And so the movie star doesn't register this at all. He doesn't register the authenticity of this fan. And therefore mistreats him. And, you know, several times he could have called the police and said, look, there's a guy here that's crossing the line, but he doesn't. He wants to do it the macho way and just tell him what for, you know, that kind of thing.
You've been a legit movie star for decades, and you've no doubt had a fan or two who's crossed the line.
I apologize to him for that already.
Yeah, I mean, Richard, he's known to do that, but we still love it because he's got a good heart. But I mean, you've got
a column.
And a column, too, so you got to be nice. But I think it just now, to Ro's point, there is so much access to information. There is so much available. You can Google people's houses. You can geolocate them at any point. You can pay people for information. I mean, you go online and you can get it on normal people, but celebrities are more people after that information.
Correct.
I imagine it would, and yet in some ways you're inviting it as a celebrity. You're inviting some attention. You just have to be mindful of what crosses the line. It just must seem so creepy for you to get inside the brain of the other side in some ways.
Well, I feel very informed about both sides because I am a fan, too. Meaning I grew up admiring Jimmy Cagney and Paul McCartney and you name it, and I was obsessed with them. And I understand that obsession. So I'm not coming from a place that doesn't have a great compassion for that viewpoint. Remember the ad for Saturday Fever when it came out, where do you go when the record's over? It's like, you know, where do you go when you can't get the autograph? What do you do? Yeah. You know, it's an interesting way to navigate through life, both being on the film side of the film actor side of it and the fan side of it.
Well, you mentioned Jimmy Cagney. It's fascinating because Jimmy Cagney was probably in the modern memory now is the gangster. But really, he was the best song and dance man of his era.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
In Hollywood. And it seems to me that that's kind of how you came into this as well. In your arc, it was you really wanted to show the audience how you moved.
True. I think Jimmy and Cagney and I have a nice parallel in that because first we're actors, but then people discovered that, ooh, you can actually sing and dance. You know, it became a bonus. Mm-hmm. Of course, in New York, you had to do all three to survive. Otherwise, you didn't work.
But that's the thing, John. I think you and I have talked about this. You've had a character actor's mentality in a leading man's career.
100%.
And, you know, no criticisms of guys like your old Pulp Fiction friend, you know, Bruce Willis. You know, John McClane is this amazing, iconic character. But you could have played that, you know, hero cop in 10 movies or on TV for 15 years. And instead, you played an awful lot of villains and a lot of character roles.
You know, it's funny because it's my comfort zone where other people might be out of their comfort zone. I'm not comfortable unless I'm playing something that someone would view as uncomfortable. I think because of my theatrical family is that we grew up building characters and we only admired each other if we pulled it off. Do you know whether it was an imitation or if it was a scene from a play or a movie? How well did you do it was what mattered, not showing up and being cute or something.
It's an interesting thing because there are people who go into the art form to be famous, and then there's people who go into it for the art form.
Correct.
Clearly, the people who have the longer trajectories, as you have had, and have interesting projects, go into it for the art. And so in this particular, you mentioned this particular movie, is a passion project. What was it that caught you?
With
Fred Durst, by the way, we should mention, is the director.
Writer and director
writer
of this film. Yeah. Yeah.
Firstly, the great directors always have vision. And Fred had a vision, and I agreed with that vision. He also wrote a character that I could think with and couldn't wait to play. Often in one's career, you have characters in your back pocket. When I played Clinton, when I played Edna on Hairspray, when the O.J. character of
Shapiro.
You're amazing at that, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
He loved doing that, too. I can
that
tell
was
you.
I know he did. I don't want to stop your train of thought, but I got to say that I covered that trial, and I got to know him, and you caught him. That's that particular miniseries, the acting could not have been better from stem to stern to create those characters because they were dead on, and you caught the inner angst and turmoil of Robert Shapiro right before LegalZoom.
Well, I was telling Richard that I asked the director if I had permission to really be him, or do I have to just be some sort of personality? Because if I just had to be, you know, show up and be who
caricature or something,
or just be me, I didn't want to. I said, but if you allow me to really go for it, I would do it.
Do you think it's better to be the creepy character because that's the one that creates the most amount of tension, the most amount of attention?
I think it's always best to be something that's well written, and really it goes down to that. Writing will always lure me in before anything. You know, when I did a civil action, Stephen
Zalian, right?
Zalian is such a brilliant writer. I was exhausted one day, and he had this 5-page speech for me to do as a voiceover. I said, "Oh, come on, Steve! Really, we've worked 15 hours." I'm excited. When I read it, I could not wait to do it. I said, let's do it right now. I got to do it. I got to say these words. I got to say these words now. So the point is that when something's on the paper and you love it, you immediately get excited and you want to portray it right away. And that's how I felt when I read The Fanatic. I couldn't wait to play Moose because I felt like I understood him. Mm-hmm. And I also understood the film star, but I've never had the angst. Look, that film star in The Fanatic is a good person, but he's a bad celebrity. And I've always felt pride in being a pretty good celebrity, meaning I've respected people, I've been well-mannered with them and kept my good feelings about them and all that. He does not. So I wasn't really attracted to playing that. But Moose, I said, someone's got to define fanism in an authentic way. Someone's got to get out there and like really get behind the passion that a fan has when it's authentic. I don't mean if it's other intended.
Because it would be easy to have that role as or play that role or write that role as someone who you don't like. You just hate someone who's pure evil, who's after something ugly, dangerous, trying to get at that celebrity. But it sounds as if from the way you're describing it that they're multi-layered here. You may actually feel for this guy.
You do.
And try to understand him and just sort of think that there's a reason behind what he's doing, too.
Yes, and some of it is hilarious. I mean, he sneaks into this guy's house. He knows that the guy is taking a sleeping pill, so he has the freedom to take selfies with him, kiss him, you know, cuddle with him.
No.
I mean, you know, you go, I didn't see that. For real?
Annie Wilkes from Misery would be a little creeped out watching some of these things. I'm just saying.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, you mentioned something that's interesting, is that there are professional fans. You know, like when you walk out of a building, right, somebody knows where you're going to be. There are people out there who have headshots and other things, and they want you to sign them so they can go sell them.
Correct.
Right? And there's a whole industry to that. And some of those people are really aggressive and, you know, inappropriate.
Yes,
people.
And that first, Moose, the character, looks like that. But the film star doesn't realize he's not that. He's really the real deal. And that's part of the problem. He's not clocking any of the spectrum behavior, and he's not clocking the authenticity of his intentions.
I want to ask very quickly, too, though. Moose rocks a mullet in this movie. John, with my keen powers of observation, I have noticed that you looked a little different from the last time I saw you.
With a full head of hair.
Yes. Yes. So is this what we're going to see from now on, or is it going to depend on the characters?
Well,
or?
It will always depend on the character in a movie. But in my real life, you will see a shaved head because hell of a bunch easy.
Yeah.
You know,
you just roll out of bed. There's no having to do anything.
It's so good.
Yeah.
But for characters, you always have to wait to see what the character will ask for itself to look like. Mm. Do you know? And in this case, it was a mullet.
You have been such an amazing and iconic actor figure in American cinema and American culture for 40 years. But the thing I admire most about you is that you got a pilot's license and you flew that 707 and you kept it in your backyard. I think that is just the coolest thing ever. You just had to retire it, right? Didn't that aircraft
retire? Yeah, I just donated it to an Australian museum where it had its life as a Qantas airliner, yes.
Yeah. Well, right, originally.
Originally,
and then
yes,
you put it in the Pan Am livery or something?
I did for a while. Yeah. I was confused. I was so excited about having an airliner. I said, I don't know what airline to choose. Then finally I made a deal with Qantas, and they painted it for me their colors. You know?
After every flight, did you have to, like, fix after every flight?
I mean, No. Listen, let me tell you something about industrial airplanes. They don't break. They're 99.9% dependable. And I found that was the 707. There's parts everywhere in the world for them. So you don't ever run into the situation where it's not feasible to get it fixed or quickly repaired.
If I could find the producers to put Airport back up, which character would you want to play?
Oh, man, that's good. That's one of my favorite movies, Airport. I mean, it's actually underestimated in the overall.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's kind of started the disaster films.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. Well, it would boil down to, what do you play, the Dean Martin role or the Burt Lancaster role? Or do you play a George Kennedy where you get to say, well, I don't care, but she's going to get it one way or another.
You know? I think if we're going back to our earlier conversation about choosing the one, like, tense role, I think it's Petroni. They don't call him emergencies.
Hey, didn't he get the Oscar for it or something?
A nomination, I think.
Yes, he got nominated. And someone won. I think it was Helen Hayes won.
Yes, for supporting actress.
But who was the best one in it was...
Those are all stage actors. So you had Van Heflin played the guy, the bomber.
That performance would hold up any day, any time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That performance, okay.
And Maureen Stapleton.
Maureen Stapleton.
Gosh, that's right.
Killed it as his wife.
Brilliant.
Right.
John, I just want to ask you, too, before we let you go. First of all, I want to let people know The Fanatic will be playing in theaters in the Chicago area this Friday. Check it out, please. And we talked about so many, you know, icons. You had the pleasure, of course, of working with Peter Fonda on Wild Hogs.
I did.
Can you just share a little memory you have of Peter?
Thank you for asking that, because I loved Peter. And I don't think everyone on the set realized the magnitude of who we had. And I said to the guys, I said, guys, this is such a big deal. I said, you know, I'm a little older than a couple of those guys, but I thought, weren't you around when Easy Rider came out? I said, I was like 14, man. It rocked. It ruled.
Changed the culture.
It changed the culture. So I sat with him for hours in the corner of one of the sets and just rocked out on hearing stories. And my favorite story he told me was that when he was 16 years old, he was on a plane, a propeller airliner, going from New York to London. And guess who was on board? Monty Clift, Marlon Brando, it's Henry Fonda, his dad, him. Imagine. And they're all in this big, giant, lumbering airliner going over to London. And he had to ask permission. I gather it was a strict upbringing. He said, Dad, could I go downstairs to the lounge? In those days, in the early days of airliners, the lounge was in the basement of the plane. It was like a bar. It was a cocktail.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's spiral staircase downstairs as opposed to 747 upstairs. So he got permission to leave Dad sitting next to Dad and go down to the bar where the guys were hanging, Clift and Brando. And I said, what was that like for you as a Brando and Cliff are at the peak of their game? And they're in this plane, you know, and hobnobbing and chatting. And he was filled with wonderful stories. I spent like 3 hours with him talking about sailing. He went from Hawaii down to Australia. He sailed all over the world. He was like an expert sailor. And he was still enthusiastic about it. He knew who he was. He knew the life he had. And he wasn't wasting it on anything. And I really love that because so many people have special lives, but they're not clocking that it's a special life. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
No.
And great you point. Wonder sometimes, you know, did Jackie Kennedy really know what kind of life she had when she did this or did that? You know, you lose your situational awareness, you know, when sometimes. And he really didn't. You know, he really was quite sharp about
nice.
What his memories were and how much he appreciated. He knew when he was making history.
Right. That's true. We'll leave it there. Awesome. John Travolta, it's such an honor, such a pleasure having you. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks,
and thank you all
thank
for
you.
Your support.
And congratulations on The Fanatic opening up this weekend.
Beautiful.
Theater near you.
Thank you.
Kim, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
The Chicago Teachers Union and the Board of Education not only at odds over a contract, now it's the city's budget. We'll bring you the details coming up.